Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin, Rumble, Band.video, or you are listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions. You can rate the show if you would like to. I would appreciate it. If you think we've earned 5 stars, please give it to us. The algorithm will thank you for that. Also, big thanks to our sponsors. They make the show happen. My Patriot Supply built us a landing page called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. The link is in the description if you need it. Listen, storable food is a good thing to have. Having something of value, trading in your soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve notes for storable food is not the worst idea I've ever heard, because it's going to last you 25 years. Your Federal Reserve notes will not. I assure you, they'll be devalued by the end of this decade if they even still exist. So, boy, I'll tell you, it's something to consider. So you can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and get yourself sorted out. If there's somebody in your life that maybe doesn't understand what's going on, you want to help them out and have some food magically appear on their front door, you can do that as well, because they've got a 3-month supply of food. They've got a 1-month supply. They've got a, you know, you can really sort yourself out for a while with this. So I'll tell you what, go to the website, see what you think. Preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Also, thanks to the guys over at EMP Shield. They're building the best device on the market. It will protect your home. It will protect your car, your motorhome, boat, generator, whatever you've got. You can install one of these devices on there. It connects with just 4 wires, like a type 2 surge protector. It'll protect you against lightning strikes. It'll protect you against solar flares and also EMPs. Hopefully we don't have one. But better to be safe than sorry, especially with this. If you want to install it yourself, go for it. You can do it. There's installation videos on their website. Just go to empshield.com. Take a look, see what you think. The promo code for that is macro. You know that I'm going to be hosting Anarchapulco February 2024. I'm really excited to be doing that, but Acapulco got slammed by a Category 5 hurricane with a lot of questions around that. It was a tropical storm, and then a couple hours later, it was a Category 5. Media wasn't talking about it. It hit Acapulco at 1 o'clock in the morning with no warning. And it hit with 165-mile-an-hour winds, and it destroyed the place. So they're rebuilding it. Jeff Berwick and his team are on the ground there. He's from he's been living in Acapulco for 15 years. His wife's family's from there. They have a lot of connections, and they are raising money. They have already raised over $250,000. They're now on the ground distributing generators, chainsaws, food, water, clothing, whatever they can get their hands on in neighboring cities, they're trucking it in. If you would like to help, the website is HurricaneOtisRecovery.com. They're going to need it. These are families out there that are in bad shape. Their homes were flooded. There was tremendous wind, as you can imagine, not a ton of rain, but the storm surge really did them in because they're right on the ocean, and also the wind. So they're in a bad way over there. If you can donate money or crypto, they'll take it. HurricaneOtisRecovery.com. If you have just the ability to retweet that or get that out there on your social media platforms, that would be appreciated as well. Well, the war, or whatever you want to call it, that's going on over in Israel and Palestine is scary. I think that goes without saying, but it's also not really surprising. When you start to look back on the history of what the American Empire has been doing, it, in retrospect, you can see all the dominoes pieces. But you know, there was a moment in time when I feel like we got a peek behind the curtain. We were told, whether this was intentional or a slip up, we were told the plan. General Wesley Clark told us on Amy Goodman's show, Democracy Now!, in 2007, what the American Empire was planning on doing. He talked about taking out 7 countries in 5 years. And everyone kind of listened to that and went, that sounds crazy, but he'd be a guy to know. Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, General Wesley Clark, 4-star general. He was the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO from 1997 to 2000. He has a Silver Star. He has a Bronze Star. He is a psychopath of the highest order, General Wesley Clark. He seems like a nice guy. You see these videos and he's just chit-chatting with Amy. He's just telling her, he seems like a guy you could go have a beer with. You can't. This guy would string you up and slit your throat with no hesitation. You don't become the Supreme Allied Commander of the North Atlantic Terrorist Organization without a lot of bodies in your past. He ran the Kosovo War. The non-war, the war when NATO definitely didn't bomb Yugoslavia. Except that, Tony Arterburn was there on the ground as a paratrooper, spotting for it, watching them bomb. So this idea that NATO's the good guys and that they don't do wars, wink, wink, that's nonsense. Those are lies. I'll tell you what else is a lie. What we do as America and all these rules of engagement. You remember hearing about the Vietnam War and they say, well, we fought that war with one arm tied behind our back. We weren't allowed to shoot unless we were being shot at, and we had all these rules. Well, I guess they changed that recently. All those things that used to be illegal, like using depleted uranium and cluster bombs, both banned, totally illegal. General Wesley Clark used those in Yugoslavia. He didn't care. He targeted civilian infrastructure. That's a war crime. He doesn't care. So you can hear him talk about this plan with Amy Goodman and come across as just a regular guy who just happened to, don't tell me. You've got classified information. Don't tell me. I can't hear that. Spare me. Spare me the act, Wesley. We know who you are. We know what you did. Depleted uranium causes multi-generational birth defects. Like, look at the pictures of Fallujah. Or maybe don't. Maybe don't. Maybe don't look at babies born in Fallujah in the mid to late 2000s after we shelled them with depleted uranium. A war crime. But this is the mentality of America, of the American Empire. Not the American people, but the American Empire for sure. General Wesley Clark, when you become the head of NATO, you also become the director of the Atlantic Council. The Atlantic Council is the NGO think tank component of NATO. So they go hand in hand. And, you know, listen, during that Yugoslavian war, they blew up the television stations, the radio station, the antennas, bombed civilians. They don't give a shit. They did all that stuff. So what does General Wesley Clark do now? Oh, he runs a strategic consulting firm. You see how that works? Yeah, now people hire him to get his psychopathic ideas on what to do. No, thank you. This is a guy who is a Rhodes Scholar. So you know he comes out of that Fabian Socialist roundtable British Empire mentality, where they fly you over to the UK and they put you through the schooling and they teach you how to be an infiltrator. They teach you how to destroy the United States from the inside. And I'll tell you what, you know, one of the things, if you want to destroy the reputation of the United States, you would do things that are against the international law. I mean, look, starting wars is bad enough. And we're certainly, the American Empire is certainly guilty of that. But then running the wars and doing all of the things that you know are illegal. That's what you do when you're a Rhodes Scholar, like Rachel Maddow and these people. They are sent to destroy from the inside. General Wesley Clark is a destroyer, a parasite. And I want to get into that interview that he did with Amy Goodman, because he casually mentions this. This was 2007. He casually mentions this conversation that he had with Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. And he's talking about this on the 20th of September, 2001. So, okay, so 9 days after 9/11, he discloses that they had already made the decision to go to war with Iraq 9 days afterwards. Not Afghanistan. Not that Afghanistan had anything to do with 9/11, but Iraq. Okay. So you've got Osama bin Laden. This is the beginning of the general public hearing about this guy. They've had a week of Osama bin Laden, but that's not who they're going after. They've made the decision to go after Iraq. Maybe George W. Bush was avenging his father. Maybe they just wanted the oil. He goes on to speculate that if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. Yeah, well, I mean, Wesley Clark is a hammer. That's what you do when you become the supreme allied commander of NATO. You are the hammer. And they seek out nails. That's how they conduct business. And he mentions in this conversation, he said, I came back a few weeks later and he asked the question, are we still going to war with Iraq? And this is his description of the conversation that he had with the guy who's sort of the go-between, the guy who he knew, but it wasn't Wolfowitz or Rumsfeld. It was somebody that was sort of in those meetings and was now talking to him. He asked the guy, so are we still going to war with Iraq? This was the guy's response. Oh, and he said, oh, it's worse than that. He reached over on his desk. He picked up a piece of paper and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office, today. And he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran. I said, is it classified? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. Yeah, don't show it to me. I would hate to commit a crime of you showing me a classified document that I don't have clearance to see, even though I've just been the supreme allied commander of NATO for the last 3 years and have started massive wars and have committed multiple war crimes. I'm really concerned about committing a crime of hearing about some classified document that I mean, get the fuck all the way out of here with this. So how did things play out from this point? How did things go? Well, we're going to go into it. We're going to get it. We're going to go through the seven countries that they listed. And we're going to ask the question, what did happen? Okay. Because that's a very specific list. That's not, we're going to take out some Middle East countries in the near future. That is seven countries in 5 years. Oh, would you like to know the seven countries? Here they are. And by the way, here's the order in which we're going to do it. Well, they started with Iraq on that list since it was already slated for destruction 9 days after 9/11. So let's start there. What does Iraq look like? Well, it's been destroyed and looted like a Foot Locker in downtown Minneapolis. I'll tell you that. And it's a damn shame, too, because this is a historically important region. It's Babylon. You know, I'm not a Bible guy. I'm not super religious, but I have a respect for antiquity. I have a respect for history. I have a respect for the past. I'd love to know more about what our real past is. But I've been to the pyramids. I've seen the Sphinx. I've done that. I've been to the Egyptian. I've spent days in the Egyptian Museum. I'd go back again and do the same thing. I'd love to do that again, knowing what I know now. Holy shit, not being 16 years old and doing that. And, you know, Iraq was a very important place. They knew that. It was more than just Saddam Hussein and that whole thing. There is a huge, important, relevant backstory to Iraq. And these lunatics know that, of course. So what did they do? They stole all the gold. We saw that. You see the pictures of the trucks filled with gold bars. I mean, if I didn't know any better, I think that Hans Gruber was in charge of this operation. They smuggled ancient artifacts out the back door. They sent teams in immediately to do that. So I guess on the one hand, I'll give them credit for respecting the artifacts enough to get them out of there in one piece and not just say, well, we're just going to turn this place into glass and bomb the whole thing. So I guess I will say that, and it's very little credit, but whatever little credit I'll give them for at least having the decency to preserve these artifacts. Now, they probably took them to Switzerland and sold them in some auction that you and I aren't going to with blood-drinking lunatics bidding on, 8,000-year-old artifacts. But the Ark of the Covenant getting sold from one Rothschild to Jeff Bezos or something. I don't know. I'm just making that up, but it seems like something that probably goes on. You know, these Sotheby's has got nothing on these deep state underground auctions. But look, they stole all the ancient artifacts, all these priceless pieces, and took them somewhere. We're probably never going to see them. They installed Western oil companies because that's what we do. I mean, that's immediately what we do. In fact, you know, the first step is, hey, can we partner with you on your oil? Meaning we'll steal all of it and give you peanuts, but make a couple people very rich. If the answer is yes, then we're in business. If the answer is no, then we rain down bombs on them until we take over their country, and then we install our oil companies in there, which is exactly what happened. I know everybody's very surprised about that, but we did that. We did that. And look, Saddam Hussein, he was our ally for a while. You know, Rumsfeld sold him all those chemicals, the chemical weapons in the 80s when they were fighting their war against Iran. You know, anyone that wants to fight Iran, we're like, oh, we'll finance you. Well, it's not so much money I need as I need chemical weapons. And I'll get on the phone with Rumsfeld. He'll be over here inside. That's why you see that grainy early 80s video of Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein, because they're doing business together, because he sold them the chemicals for the, you know, when they say, we think that you have aluminum tubes and yellow cake uranium and all these chemical weapons, it's like, why would you think that they had all these? Like, mistakes were made. Rumsfeld just might have sold it to him in the 80s. That's why we know. I mean, I got a receipt. I've got this invoice for all these chemical weapons that I sold you. That's how I know they're. I don't know where they are, but I know you bought them from me at some point. How'd Halliburton do in the Iraq War? remember that Cheney was the CEO of Halliburton. He put that membership on ice. You know, Rumsfeld was the head of the RAND Corporation too. He put that on ice. And then they came in and started a regional war that Halliburton could make billions from, and RAND could definitely manage from the scenes. RAND being like a large military industrial think tank. A lot of thinking going on. A lot of thinking about how to destroy humanity while making money at the same time. Pretty disgusting. So, Iraq, obviously, first on the list, took the brunt of this, not just bombed, but also then invaded, destroyed, raped, pillaged. All the things that you do during war happened in Iraq. Damn shame, man. Didn't have to be that way. But, you know, listen, if they didn't want that, then they shouldn't have done 9/11. Just kidding. God. Moving next onto the list is Syria. Now, the American government hates Syria. Nothing against them personally. It's just that, you know, Bashar al-Assad, their leader, is loved by his people. He's despised by the CIA, in part because he's loved by his people. But we have had a boner to get him out of office for a long, long time. Can't seem to make it happen, but but we try, you know. We tried, we talked about how we had to get ISIS out of Iraq because they were a huge problem. And one of the ways that we dealt with Syria was by creating ISIS and installing them in Syria through our Western intelligence agencies and also Israel. So again, you've got to appreciate the hypocrisy of this whole thing. We're in Iraq to get ISIS because they're the bad guys, while simultaneously starting an ISIS cell and installing them in Syria because Syria's the bad guys. And then Hillary Clinton goes out and says, "We're fighting ISIS." Bitch, you assembled the team for ISIS. Are you out of your fucking mind? Stop this. Stop the insanity. So look, Assad helps to sort of offset his costs by accepting aid from China and Russia and Iran. All of them bad guys as far as the American Empire is concerned. This is like the new axis of evil. I guess North Korea didn't send them anything, but what's North Korea going to send them? So Syria takes money from these other groups because those other groups understand what's happening in Syria. They understand that Syria is a part on this chessboard and that it is actively being destabilized by the West for a variety of reasons. One, militarily, you know, just its simple geography. But, you know, there are currently 1,000 U.S. troops in Syria right now. Do you know what they're in charge of doing? They're in charge of protecting the American, I should say, Western corporations, oil companies that are in there stealing the Syrian oil. Okay. So we have troops, we, America, have troops in Syria. Syria didn't invite them in. They have invaded Syria. And they are there working as bodyguards for Western oil companies so that the Western oil companies can not do a partnership with Syria. No, no. Straight up steal their shit. So we talk about rules-based world orders and fairness and democracy. We're just the biggest bunch of hypocrites in the world while we're actively stealing their oil. We're petty thieves. The American Empire is thugs and thieves. And okay, so like the history of ISIS, Israeli Secret Intelligence Service, anyone? The history of ISIS is really, it's thought to be a Saudi project, which wouldn't be too, you know, Saudis, Israelis, Americans all working together on this. It's the boogeyman du jour. right? You can create this group and you can use this group to do all kinds of things. You need, if the current administration in a country that doesn't want to work with you is not working with you, you can send this, you can set up ISIS and install it in their country and create havoc and then destabilize it and either overthrow that country or at least get to a point where they put a different ruler in there, one that the CIA grooms and selects, and install that puppet in there, and then things will be better for the American empire. So ISIS is a tool. It's not necessarily like an ideological tool. It's just a proxy army. You can fill it up and sick it on whoever you want. And but somewhere along the way, ISIS kind of grew and kind of, you know, flipped on them and kind of got out of their control. And I think that that group is now not necessarily financed by the West, but it's financed by other entities too. So it's not just that, you know, the Americans and the Saudis and the Israeli had their ISIS bulldog, but somebody treated the ISIS bulldog better and now they've got it. So America doesn't control it the way it used to, and therefore, if they can't control it, then they want it, you know, destroyed. Syria was also a very important place because the CIA was buying weapons from Eastern Europe, about $1.5 billion worth of AK-47s and mortars and things like that, and they were supplying them to Syria for this war, right? They're trying to destabilize from the inside. And the flow of weapons didn't just go from Eastern Europe into Syria. They wanted it to go a different route so that there could be some deniability. So they rerouted it through Libya. You might have heard of it. They rerouted it through a place called Benghazi. And that was what the Benghazi event was all about. It was CIA buying weapons from Eastern Europe, running them through Benghazi under the watch of Hillary Clinton, and then from Benghazi sending them to Syria to be used to destabilize the Assad regime. So we're the bad guys in this equation, as you haven't figured it out. They want to get him out of office. The military component of this wasn't really working. So they tried the media side. They tried to demonize him in the Western world as being a person that gasses his own people. Remember that? He's gassing his own people. No, he wasn't. No, the propaganda photo of the gas canister that was used in this bomb was totally fake. I mean, the picture might have been real. The scene was fake. The whole thing was faked. There was even a point where there was like a CNN journalist, and CNN journalists are, you know, are idiots, but I repeat myself. There's a scene, and I call it a scene because it can best be described as acting, what was going on here, but it was supposed to be like a live remote from this area. And the CNN journalist is at this place where chemical weapons have been used and these things, and she grabs the thing. I think it was a she. It might have been a guy. I don't know. It doesn't matter. The reporter grabs this item and then sniffs it, puts it up to her face, sniffs it, gives it a couple sniffs and puts it down. It's like, oh yeah, chemical weapons. You just sniffed a chemical, the remnants of a bombed out area that they use chemical weapons, and you confirmed that it was chemical weapons because I think it was like a backpack, because you picked up the backpack and you sniffed it yourself. Did you drop dead? I'm asking the obvious question. Did you drop dead? Or is this performance art? Do you think that we're all stupid? I understand that the producers at CNN are stupid when they're not raping children and getting convicted for it, but do you think that the rest of us are stupid? Because we watched that and just looked at each other like, what are you doing? You're so bad at propaganda. I mean, honest to God, I feel like that. It would never work for these people. But it's like you could hire a consultant to teach you how to make better false flags. You know, it'd be like, hey, step number one, don't sniff the evidence of the chemical weapons unless you are willing to really kill one of your reporters. That would be rad. You could have them go over there and sniff it and then just immediately keel over and turn blue. That would be evidence of a chemical weapon. But to sniff the item and then say, oh yeah, that smells terrible, and then go, well, now back to you in the studio. It's just it's junior varsity level. Or maybe we're just getting better at noticing these. Maybe they've always been this bad. Maybe just the internet and video and whatnot makes it easier to distinguish the lies. But there's a lot of lying going on. That is undeniable. And Syria played a very important part in this because they just really see Assad as a problem. Now, the Russians and Putin and his crew, they see Syria as a partner they can work with. In fact, they have supplied the country with S-400 surface-to-air missile systems in Syria. So they mean business. Russia's saying, listen, we'll send you what you need. China's saying, we've got items for you. Iran is saying, you know, let us know. Let us know if you need anything. The removal of Assad was the mission of the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Israel. And it ended in failure. Okay? They failed. They got an F on that one. Let's move on. Let's move to Lebanon. Okay? Lebanon has been in it for 40 years, since the early 80s, when they turned Beirut, which used to be one of the most beautiful cities in the world, into rubble. The United States Secretary of State Hillary Clinton supported military involvement in the elections of Lebanon. So that's not great. When, you know, free and fair elections. Hillary Clinton would later go on to claim that she beat Donald Trump and accuse him of stealing the election. Why isn't she an election denier? She supported military involvement in the elections of Lebanon. Why isn't she an election denier there? Funny. It only works one way. So in Lebanon, and look, here's the disclosure. I'm not an expert in Middle Eastern geopolitics. There are plenty of people out there that know this area much better than I do. I know a little bit. I think I know enough to be dangerous, right? So I'm gonna get it as right as I can. And I'm not gonna get into all of the details. And I'm gonna say as a disclaimer as well that I fully recognize that a lot of these battles go back decades, if not centuries. Okay. So there's a lot of tension there for a variety of reasons. So when I start to talk about the reason why there's a war or the reason why we went in, this is one of the reasons. There are many more. This is not meant to be like an exhaustive list, but when you say you're going to destroy seven countries in 5 years, we have the benefit of hindsight now. When he said that in 2007, we had to take his word for it. We had to just watch and see, okay, well, where are we going to be? Now, 15 years later, we have the benefit of looking back and go, okay, well, did they get seven countries in 5 years? And if they did, what was the process? What was happening at that moment when this was going on? So we've got inside of Lebanon, you've got the Lebanese army and you've got Hezbollah. Hezbollah is a political faction. They call them a terrorist faction, right? You know, but one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter, right? So it just depends on sort of how you view this. So the United States and its allies, the European Union, have labeled Hezbollah a terrorist organization because it's undermining the West's control of Lebanon. And we want to have control there, you know, maybe not on a day-to-day, hourly basis, but we want to at least know who's going to be there and make sure that we can control them with our dollars, make sure we can control them with our weapons, our mutual defense arrangements, legally get them involved in some sort of arrangements, but also just hold them hostage with money. hold them hostage, force them to use the petrodollar, force them to buy our weapons, force them to do these sorts of things. And when you've got a group like Hezbollah in there destabilizing it, well, then that's a problem for the American empire's control. And so we would say that group is a terrorist organization. And Israel would say that group is a terrorist organization. But I think if you ask the people that were members of Hezbollah, or if you were talking to some of the people of Lebanon that don't appreciate the West's interactions in their country, they would say, finally, somebody's stepping up for us, standing up and defending us, because our current government is captured. They're not doing anything. So maybe we have to have this other group, right? And that's where we are. So you get Hezbollah is formed in 1982, right after the Lebanon War. They're big fans, or they were big fans, Ayatollah Khomeini. That's the Iranian dictator that the Americans were so terrified of in the 80s, and he was going to get us all and behead us and make us participate in Sharia law and all these things that the television told us, right? None of that happened. But they were formed in 1982 in part to resist Israel's northward advancements. If you take a look on the map, you've got Lebanon is north of Israel, right? So Israel is acting crazy. They're taking all this land. They'd been taking all this land since 1948. They're coming in and the Palestinians' land's getting smaller and smaller and shrinking. And the Lebanese are going, we know where this is headed. Eventually, they're going to start going north towards us. So we're going to need something. And here comes Hezbollah as a counterweight to that. They've been accused of drug trafficking to help finance operations. But, frankly, that sounds a lot more like projection from the CIA, if you're asking me. That's how the CIA runs their operations. So if Hezbollah were to be involved in drug trafficking, which they may be, for all I know, then it would be kind of ironic and definitely hypocritical for the CIA to use that as the pretense for why we have to go in there and get them. Oh, listen, we can't have these groups run these rogue armies running drugs to finance their operations. That's our game, right? So, and Hezbollah has sent troops in to support Syria, to support Assad. So we obviously hate that, right? That can't happen. That's a big problem for everybody. So, as far as the American empire is concerned, Lebanon has a problem because they have a group residing inside their borders that is not friendly to Israel, for sure, and really not friendly to the American empire. So in 2006, Israel and Hezbollah fought from July 12th to August 14th. So nice little one-month summer war. Hezbollah shot some Israelis that were out on patrol. Israel answered with airstrikes inside Lebanon using illegal cluster bombs, because of course they did. And I think in the end, it was like a 10-to-1 kill rate. It was 120 dead Israelis, 1,300 dead Hezbollah. United Nations got involved and eventually was able to get Israel, get the IDF, Israeli Defense Force, out of Lebanon. I mean, if the United Nations didn't do that, Israel would be in there taking more territory. And then we get to the more recent event with Lebanon. And I wonder how many of you saw this, but the Beirut port explosion from a couple years ago. Did you see this? This is blamed on ammonium nitrate. Oh boy, where have I heard that before? Was a Ryder van parked at the Beirut port too? I mean, I think there were reports that Timothy McVeigh was making his escape out the side door and got, the whole thing just sounds fake to me. This port explosion, which was captured on multiple videos, you can watch this thing go up. They described it as one of the most powerful, artificial, non-nuclear explosions in history. So artificial, meaning not a volcano, non-nuclear. It was felt 150 miles away. 218 people died. Why? I'm a coincidence theorist on this one. Okay. I'm just going to have to tell you right now. I do not believe something like that. If this happened in some obscure port in some country that nobody had ever heard of, and it wasn't in the Middle East, and it didn't have a problem with Israel and the United States, I would maybe be willing to consider the possibility that you had a massive fertilizer explosion. I might maybe sort of think about that. With all you know about how fertilizer goes up, you're trying to tell me you don't have checks and balances in place to make sure that something like this doesn't happen. I'm sure the story seems fishy to me. I think it was meant to happen. I don't have proof of that. That's where my, this is speculation island for me, but I'm just of the belief that something like that, an explosion that was felt 150 miles away at a port, a very necessary port for Lebanon in Beirut, just magically happened to obliterate itself. I don't know. The economy's terrible there. It's 50% poverty rate, debt default by the government. There's a lot happening, right? There's a lot going on behind the scenes. These are the sorts of explosions that that come usually as a signal that there's more where that came from. Maybe as a threat. I'd say keep your eyes on that one over the years and see when somebody's able to get in there and get the information about what's really going on. I should talk to Vanessa Beely about this. Frankly, she probably knows it really well. This is it's just made to happen. So again, you know, but when you're one of the seven countries in 5 years, and then your port just up and explodes. And the explosion is heard 150 miles away. You know, like I'm sorry. That's just that sounds like it's got America's or Israel's fingerprints all over it. Let's move on. Let's move on to Libya. You remember Libya, right? Home of Muammar Gaddafi. Yeah, he makes a Jim Brewer brings his character to life in the intro to this podcast. Boy, I'll tell you, we came, we saw, he died, Hillary Clinton. Cackle, cackle, cackle. Oh, she just loves killing people. She loves it. They, while she and her group was simultaneously running weapons through Libya, running weapons to arm rebels in other countries such as Syria through Benghazi. Remember that? 2012. Ambassador Chris Stevens, remember him? Remember that? They've Hollywood has given it the treatment, right? They've whitewashed that video, making it look we're all the good guys there, and these crazy Arabs overran the compound, and we went down fighting. Dude, you were running drugs, and you were running weapons through their country, as the CIA and State Department was doing that. This isn't in debate. This is a proven fact. Hillary Clinton was in charge of this. You know, Libya is an interesting place because the wealthiest country in Africa, it had the highest quality of life of any of the countries. It had great education system. You know, say what you want about Gaddafi. He was very focused on taking care of his own people. If you grew up there, you could go to school. That was covered. If you got married, there was like a stipend they gave you, like a bonus for getting married and having kids. And they were building water desalinization plants, and they were trying to move off of just being, you know, on some piece of desert in the middle of nowhere. They were trying to use their ports in the Mediterranean. They were trying to use the resources that they had underground, and they were trying to transform their country. They were trying to do things differently. We can't have that, because the minute Gaddafi tried to institute a gold-backed dinar, then he got some democracy dropped on him from 30,000 feet. And it ended with him on video in a ditch getting sodomized by a knife to the thunderous approval of Hillary Clinton, who only wishes she could have been there to do it herself. Healthy social safety nets in developing countries terrifies the United States. They don't want you to even consider that that is a possibility. They don't want you to think that some other country could possibly offer things like that. And so we bombed the shit out of it, right? In 2011, AFRICOM started bombing it. AFRICOM is, well, we'll get to them in a second when we talk about Somalia. But AFRICOM, which is the American command center, it was in charge of turning Libya into rubble. Now we have open air slave trade business market happening there. Business is booming. You'd think that the Clintons would get involved in that. You know, they love slaves so much, Haiti and whatnot. But Saif Gaddafi, Muammar's son, interesting dude, studied at London School of Economics, makes him a basically that group, that school was started by Fabian socialists. So you've got this destroyer mentality again. The globalist strike, you know, they were getting the sons of dictators accustomed to their way of thinking. Okay, so I mentioned we would get into AFRICOM with Somalia. Let's talk about Somalia, right? You go, well, Somalia hasn't really been blown up too bad, has it? Has it? Well, you remember Black Hawk Down, right? That was 1993. That was before the proclamation from the Wesley Clark. But still, I mean, America had been involved in Somalia for a while. In fact, more recently, just in February of 2022, there were U.S. airstrikes against Al-Shabaab, which are known as terrorists. And I put that in air quotes because who knows if they're actual terrorists. They're just people that go against the, I mean, I think technically I qualify as a terrorist in the eyes of the United States Empire because I don't agree with the things that they're doing. Therefore, I'm a threat. I'm a domestic terrorist to them. So when they say that Al-Shabaab is a terrorist organization, you know, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But maybe they're just defending themselves from outsiders, you know, like the American Empire, who are definitely a terrorist organization, or NATO, which is a terrorist organization. So AFRICOM is United States Africa Command. It was started in 2007. Oh wait, when was this article? When did he give this? When he had this conversation with Amy Goodman, 2007. It was started in 2007 by Donald Rumsfeld, who loves war and murder, and it was headquartered in Germany because that makes sense, right? I guess maybe because Germany loves war and murder as much as Donald Rumsfeld does. I don't know. I just would have assumed that AFRICOM was based in, you know, Africa, but it's not. So, AFRICOM said the following, quote, "The federal government of Somalia and the U.S. remain committed to fighting Al-Shabaab to prevent the deaths of innocent civilians, .. by bombing innocent civilians." It's back to the hammer. Here's the Somali nail in the form of Al-Shabaab. I mean, if I didn't know any better, I'd think that maybe Al-Shabaab was financed and created by the United States. Wink, wink. U.S. forces are authorized to conduct strikes when supporting combatant commander-designated partner forces under the 2001 Authorization of Use of Military Force. So there is a law that says that it's fine if the U.S. conducts strikes, as long as they are supporting their partners. It's totally fine, man. What's your problem? I mean, yeah, we're bombing Somalia, but it's legal. That's what I mean. That's what they're saying. Like it's legal. So again, 7 countries, 5 years. Oh, they haven't done anything to Somalia. I remember talking to Jeff Berwick, and he was saying that people would say to him like, "Oh, you like anarchy so much? Why don't you go to Somalia?" So he was like, "Shit, let's go." So he asked Luke Radowski, "You want to go to Somalia with me?" And Luke was like, "Sure, let's go." So they went. And they were in Mogadishu, and he said it was super dangerous. Like he's that wherever, you know, they had security guards that they hired with them. And he said that when they're in the hotel, like inside the courtyard area where you could look up and you could see the sky, but you're pretty much sort of surrounded inside this courtyard. He said that they were close enough to the airport, I guess near the flight path. He said that like all you would see coming in were private jets. And he was asking guys like, what's with all the private jets coming in? The guy's like, oh, those are all the World Bank guys. And they're like, oh, of course. of course. Send in the bankers on private jets to Mogadishu after we bomb them out a little bit. Send the bankers in. Frankly, send the bankers first before we do the bombing. Let's move on to Sudan. So Sudan is, for those of you that failed geography, Sudan is in northern Africa, and there was an issue pre 9/11, 2000 to be exact, the USS Cole bombing. Do you remember that? It was a boat, and this another boat, a smaller boat, came up alongside of it that had explosives in it. And 500 pounds of explosives, and they got right up next to the hull and blew themselves up and blew a big hole in the coal. So what did the United States do? The United States put Sudan on the terrorist blacklist, even though the perpetrators of the bombing were from Yemen, because we're just crazy lunatics that don't do whatever we want. I don't know. Bill Clinton, if you recall back in 1998, Bill Clinton bombed a chemical facility in Sudan, in Khartoum. And I remember thinking, aren't we supposed to like declare war? We get to just go bomb one building? That's weird. But we did it. And Bill Clinton stood up there and said, we took out that chemical weapons. You know, and everyone was like, oh, good for you, Bill. Dude, thanks for saving us from Sudan. Where is Sudan on the map? My knowledge of Sudan, I think, begins and ends with the fact that Manute Bol played basketball. He was like 7'6", and he was from Sudan. That's the end of my knowledge of Sudan up until a couple of years ago. So we're going to put them on this watch list because they're terrorists. Are they terrorists? They did the USS Cole, really, but the guys that did it were from Yemen. Like, well, you know, I mean, Yemen, Sudan, what's the difference, right? There was a guy though who was running Sudan for like 30 years, and finally, they changed governments during the Trump administration, and this guy's name was al-Bashir. And after 30 years of al-Bashir, they brought a new guy in. I'm sure the CIA installed him. And this new government paid Trump, not Trump personally, because if he paid him personally, we most definitely that'd be on the news, paid the United States under Trump $335 million to U.S. terror victims and families so that Trump would remove them from the list of state sponsors of terror. You can just buy your way off? That's crazy that you can be a state sponsor of terror, but if you pay $335 million, then you're magically not a state sponsor of terror anymore. Funny how that works. Did they donate it to the Clinton Foundation? Because that's how it normally works. So now they have been taken off the list. Now they aren't on the list anymore of state sponsors of terror. They've left that for the remaining countries. North Korea, as they hunt for anything alive to eat, they'll eat anything with four legs except a chair. They'll eat anything with wings except a 747. North Korea, Syria, and Iran. Speaking of Iran, didn't we get to the seven countries in 5 years and finishing with Iran? I want to read you a quote from my Octopus book. I want you to understand the mentality of these people. When you think that we are anti-war, and you project that onto your politicians and high-ranking officials, assuming that because you don't want war, because you're a decent human being, that they don't want war, that is a miscalculation on your part. Because these people will tell you what they actually think if you let them talk. And I want to read a quote from Patrick Clawson, a certified psychopath of the highest order. I want you to hear his words and understand he works for Israel. Okay, and I want you to know this is what he thinks of peace. Patrick Clawson, quote, I frankly find that crisis initiation is really tough, and it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us into war with Iran, which leads me to conclude that if in fact compromise is not coming, that the traditional way that America gets into war is what would be best for U.S. interests. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II. As Dave mentioned, you may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. This is, by the way, as a side, he's giving this presentation. It's on video. You can watch him saying all these words. Some people might think Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II. As you may recall, we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. Some people think Mr. Wilson wanted to get us into World War I. You may recall we had to wait for the Lusitania episode. Some people might think that Mr. Johnson wanted to send troops to Vietnam. You may recall we had to wait for the Gulf of Tonkin episode. We didn't go to war with Spain until the USS Maine exploded. And I might point out that Mr. Lincoln did not feel he could call out the Federal Army until Fort Sumter was attacked, which is why he ordered the commander of Fort Sumter to do exactly that thing which the South Carolinians had said would cause an attack. So if in fact, the Iranians aren't going to compromise, it would be best if somebody else started the war. One can combine other means of pressure with sanctions. I mentioned that explosion on August 17th. We could step up the pressure. I mean, look, people, Iranian submarines periodically go down. Someday, one of them might not come up. Who would know why? We could do a variety of things if we wish to increase the pressure. I'm not advocating that, but I'm just suggesting that this is not an either-or proposition. You know, it's just sanction has to succeed or it's other things. We are in the game of using covert means against the Iranians. We could get nastier at that. Patrick Clawson, Israel lobbyist, suggesting a false flag attack with Iran. This is the crown jewel. This is what all the buildup is for. This is the target. They don't give a shit about Syria and Sudan and Somalia and Libya. What they really want is Iran. Israel wants them. Saudi Arabia wants them. America wants them. They want a war with them. They want that country gone. It's always the Israelis always talking about Israel's right to defend itself. And Iran says that they want to wipe us off the map. No. You got that backwards. You want to wipe Iran off the map. You vocalize and verbalize that all the time. The Israeli lunatics there talk about that endlessly. This is what they want. It's last on the list for a reason. It's tricky. It's dangerous. And look, they're well connected. They have relationships with China. They have relationships with Russia. They have relationships with all the Islamic countries in the region. everybody knows what Iran is all about. Okay. They're hardcore fundamentalists. They see the world a certain way, you know, and they've got a problem with Israel, and Israel's got a problem with them. And so if they've got a problem, then we, by default, we have to have a problem with them. I say we, meaning the American empire, not we, the American people. But I would like to remind the general public, I would like to remind especially the lunatics that are running this country, that 2 to 3 million barrels of oil each and every day, when the sun comes up, you got about 3 million barrels of oil that is leaving Iran for somewhere. You've got the Strait of Hormuz, which runs along the western side of Iran. There is a kink in this strait. It's not perfectly straight all the way up. There's a bit of a bend in it, and that bend is the Strait of Hormuz. It's very narrow, and everything needs to go through there. It's right on the corner. You probably might want to pull up a map, but it's right on the corner of where the, you know, United Arab Emirates and Oman on one side of the peninsula, then a thin strip of water, which is this Strait of Hormuz, and then Iran on the other side of that. 21 million barrels per day of oil flows through that Strait of Hormuz. $1.17 billion every day. It's very important. It's very important for this region. It's very important to understand what Iran has done with this oil wealth, too. They've used it for a variety of things. They have, they fund operations in their region. They fund Hezbollah. And guess what? They also fund Hamas. Qatar mostly funds Hamas now, but there was a time when it, when Hamas was being formed by the Israeli Mossad, that they were taking Iranian money. I think that's now sort of pivoted to Qatar financing that, but Qatar's got more money than they know what to do with too. So they're definitely a player in this. And listen, they have hypersonic missiles as well. This is not Iraq that you're just going to go. Geographically speaking, it's like three times the size of Iraq. So we couldn't control Iraq very well. We certainly don't have the appetite for another Iraq, especially one that's three times bigger and has ties to China and Russia and drag them into this war. But look, when you've got 1/3 of the world's liquefied natural gas and 1/4 of the world's crude going through the Strait of Hormuz, then you have to be aware of what a war with Iran would mean to the world's global oil supply. Now, that oil could get through there and can get out to where it needs to go as long as there's no war. The minute war starts, they can block that. Or they can make sure that the oil only goes out of there to the places that they want it to go to. Good luck to the United States. You think you're going to, you know, not that the United States is buying Iranian oil, but it doesn't matter. You're buying oil from UAE. It's got to go through there. You're buying oil from a bunch of countries in that region. And so if they can control that, or at least make it so that they don't even have to set up physical barriers, they just have to let the world know, you sail those ships out of there, we'll hit you with one of those Iranian submarines that Patrick Clausen is fantasizing will never come up to the surface again. Take out a big ship with a bunch of, you know, that's carrying oil, and they all stop going. Good luck getting insurance on those boats too, by the way, even in peacetime, you know what I mean? Coming around there, you've got the threat of pirating these ships, and you've got the threat of sinking them. You've got the threat of them being used in some sort of political, as a political pawn. No, thank you, man. This is a very important region. So, you know, I think that when you get an inside look, like General Wesley Clark gave us, about 7 countries in 5 years, I think it's worth paying attention to. You know, I don't trust him. But this memo came true. Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing up Iran. We got 6 out of 7. I hope we don't get the 7th. It's all about oil and gas control. It always is. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now, sharing it with your friends and family. If you want to, you can connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.